Hey everybody, welcome to Expository Dialogue on Idiomatic.com, the show where we take headlines from the world of entertainment and dissect them, much like a gossip magazine dissects a Miley Cyrus performance.
Hi, this is Phil, the professional time waster slash game designer.
I'm Nicholas, I'm the video game correspondent for Idiomatic.
And I'm Dimitri, editor-in-chief of Idiomatic.com and movie critic. Now here's how things are going to work. Every episode is going to be divided in two halves as opposed to three. The first dealing with general entertainment news relating to movies and television and whatnot, and the second half dealing specifically with gaming. Now, since this is our first episode, we've got a lot of catching up to do, starting with our first news item. For 2 weeks now, everybody's been talking about Ben Affleck is the new Batman in the upcoming Batman vs. Superman untitled project from Warner Brothers.
And everybody's reaction is, oh my god, he's going to kill the franchise.
Yeah, no, I think if if Bryan Singer didn't do it, then Ben Affleck should be.
I don't know. All I get is visions of, you know, Ben Affleck from Mallrats, of, I mean, even Good Will Hunting. I mean, even his best roles, I'm having trouble taking that face, transposing it onto either Bruce Wayne or Batman.
He does have, like, that sort of pronounced chin that would look terrible under a mask. Like, I don't know if anybody thought this one
had
through.
Not even thought of that.
It's like, that was the main problem with Daredevil, aesthetically speaking, where it's like, oh, that's a big chin you have, sir.
Maybe they'll change the costume for him to have, like, a chin guard or something, you know, so you just see the mouth.
Having said that, I kind of do see him as Bruce Wayne, as a more level-headed Bruce Wayne. He does have that sort of, like, bad boy, rich, industrialist thing down pat. Like, he's played that sort of character quite a few times, and he's very good at sort of layering a little bit of emotion behind that. But his characters have never been completely unhinged, and so does that mean the DC are headed towards a more level-headed Batman? That would be interesting, certainly since we just saw Batman as unhinged as he gets with Christian Bale, so it would be an interesting new direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as long as he, you know, keeps that sort of cocky little smirk down, that I think it could be good.
I feel like there was a terrible reaction when Mr. Mom was announced as Batman.
Oh, that's a good point.
So I think just it's a risk, but just see what it's going to give. And if you don't like him, he'll be there for one movie, maybe two, and that's it.
Well, he's signed for three.
Yeah, they can still fire him and give him the money.
Buyouts happen all the time.
So if he's terrible, they'll just say, take the money and leave. We'll get somebody else. And it'll happen. I wouldn't worry too much.
That's a good point. You make a good point, especially about the fact that Michael Keaton was a very unlikely choice back in 1989. I was one of the kids going like, Michael Keaton, Beetlejuice is going to be Batman? And then I saw the movie, I was like, oh wow, he's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
He did. And we can't forget there was also similar backlash as recently as Heath Ledger for the Joker.
Oh, that's true.
Ultimately, there's always a big reaction. We shouldn't speak too soon and we'll wait and see. Yeah. I have never seen Ben Affleck really transform into a different character. Well, that's always the thing, you know. When you see Ben Affleck in a role, it's usually always Ben Affleck in some variation or another. But I'm curious. I have to admit, it made me download Argo. I'm going to watch it, see how he pulls that off. Definitely willing to keep an open mind, given, you know, like you say, Michael Keaton, Heath Ledger, we've been surprised in the past.
Absolutely. The one thing that I am sad about regarding this news is that it means it's going to take time away from him being a director. And since I like him so much more as a director than an actor, I'm sort of a little bit disappointed. Like, already he's opted out of filming The Stand, Stephen King's The Stand. They've replaced him with Scott Cooper because he's playing Batman and he won't have time to film it. And that's unfortunate because I think he has more to offer as a filmmaker.
Do they have directors for the next two Batman movies he's been
signed
for?
He is apparently, I don't know if it's in talks, or basically everyone's assuming that he may direct the Justice League movie that would come after the Batman and Superman. So,
okay.
That might stem from this whole thing. If Batman and Superman goes well,
that could be it. Must see, that could be interesting. Yeah.
I see.
All right, next news item. There's a campaign for a sequel to Dread.
Absolutely. Facebook campaign. I think there were like 20,000-30,000 likes. It's like a month old. getting a lot of speed. And yeah, it's Make a Dread Sequel. It's like facebook.com/MakeADreadSequel. Dread, for me, definitely one of the better comic book movies that came out recently. Great adaptation of the character. On its own, really fun little sci-fi film. You know, stands on its own. Good writing, it's tight, etc., etc. Totally flopped at the box office. Doing well DVDs and rentals, I think. So much that yeah, there's a nice little movement to bring back people. Love Carl Urban as Dredd.
He would have made a great Batman. I think you're right.
And yeah, it's become already a cult film and people are really behind it. It could be interesting. It might actually be a campaign that actually works to make it.
I think that Dredd was missing Stallone. I mean, how can you remake Dredd without Stallone?
The Rob Schneider. Schneider.
You one-upped me once again.
No, I actually really like Dredd. I like that movie a lot. It's tight. It's sort of almost a bottle movie, and I like that. I like that idea a lot. And yeah, they've left it wide open for further adventures of Dredd. So, at the same time, I wonder how feasible that is to generate a campaign to get a movie done like this. We've seen it happen with TV shows. Like Family Guy got back on air that way. Yeah. Futurama certainly. So it would be a first for movies.
Didn't they get back based on DVD sales though? Or we want the DVDs because we want to buy them though.
Yeah.
You know, a Facebook page is just people clicking like, not committing to anything at all. They're just like, and that's it.
Yes and no, but it implies sort of people are into it. And there have been sort of, in the case of Dredd, there have been matching DVD sales. There was one pretty fast.
Okay.
It's one of the top movies on Netflix, like most popular ones being watched on Netflix right now, things like that. So I know what you mean. It can seem a little ridiculous, but usually it's the fans that are actually, you know, they're also going to go on Reddit and they're also going to go on Twitter and they're also going to sort of post things here and there. And if there's a Kickstarter that shows up, you know, they'll pay, they'll support, I think. Because there is the new Veronica Mars film, for example, which is maybe a good example of that now.
Yeah.
Kickstarter campaign, all funded by public, obviously, to bring back an old TV show and make a film out of it. And it's actually happened.
Well, partially funded that, because actually they already have studio approval for the Veronica Mars movie. They just need that extra amount of money for the deal to fall through. And essentially that extra amount of money is just proof that there's an audience for it that the studio's looking for. So I think that's a great model for Dredd as well, is now that you have the Facebook page, a DVD sell, the Kickstarter thing, just to prove to the studios that people actually will invest in seeing this movie. I think it's not a bad idea at all.
Yeah, because I don't think they would be able to make a Dredd movie with the amount of money they got from Veronica Mars.
No, again, it would be probably just a portion of the budget. Ultimately, Dredd wasn't that expensive a film. I mean, for what it is, you know, on the screen, it's relatively low budget. You know, they shot in South Africa. They cut costs sort of in a lot of ways.
It's like one location.
Yeah, exactly. They're pretty smart sort of about how they did it. Again, it would be like that other one. Not necessarily a matter of paying for the whole film, but just enough to show that you have an audience, just enough for them to sort of agree with the film.
Okay.
That's interesting. Speaking of Kickstarter, we have a Kickstarter for a director's cut of Ghostbusters 2. Bradley Bjornstad, forgive me if I butchered that name, has started a Kickstarter campaign to make a documentary movie about the making of Ghostbusters 2, which was sort of a cluster F during production. In fact, Bill Murray renounced the movie and said, that's not the movie I worked on when it came out. And there are entire plot threads completely changed and removed because they brought in new editors out of left field to make the movie more commercially appealing instead of letting the director's vision come through. So Rick Moranis has sort of a story arc that peters out in the theatrical cut, whereas he was supposed to become a Ghostbuster, everything like that. So what Bjornstad is proposing is to make a documentary with the actors in the movie talking about what the movie, the film, actually was, and from there reconstitute from the footage that they still have what the movie should have been. So that's an interesting campaign.
I, for one, did not even know that Ghostbusters 2 had been butchered and everything. I thought from the very beginning it was planned out as a carbon copy of this one.
Mm. Yeah.
that was just the whole idea behind the film. So, very interested in that. Behind-the-scenes documentaries are always fun to see, especially if it goes really in-depth into what could have been. And a potentially better version of Ghostbusters 2 coming out? Hell yeah.
Yeah.
I might just give money to that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting.
He's only looking for $100,000, which just surprised me. Which was like, is this a con?
It's like, I know.
That's really low.
Well, if you're just interviewing the actors, I mean, I'm guessing they're doing it in their time, so you don't have to pay them. And then what else he needs to just get his hand on the original footage and just cut it, you know, the way it was supposed to be. So maybe that's where the money's going, actually. That's probably take a lot of time. So
yeah, and in fairness, he did say that he's setting the goal at that because he thinks he can get the documentary done and get the rights for the footage for that amount. But he'd love to get more money, and he would invest that money into making a better documentary. So, you know.
$100,000, it's only like him and like the four actors sitting in a room just talking, and that's it, you know, and nothing else. That'd be pretty bad, but yeah, I'd watch it anyway, honestly.
90% of it was Bill Murray's fee, but you know, conversation's good.
Yeah.
Whatever.
But I love a Kickstarter campaign that actually tells you what it will do with the extra money, because there's been a couple of very controversial Kickstarter campaigns where they exceeded their goals, and then that money just disappeared into someone's pocket.
Yeah. The goals haven't changed. What's going on?
Yeah. And that's the main problem with Kickstarter. People should basically say, what are you going to do with the extra money, and up to how much can you spend? And people should have at least, you know, the honesty of saying, I have enough money. I'm stopping the Kickstarter. Thank you all. I'm just taking the money I have now, and I'm gonna do it. Mm-hmm. You know, that'd be great. But people are just we have our money. Just keep going. Keep going.
Especially a lot of people who are donating once it's already hit the target.
Yeah,
it's like okay,
stop giving money.
You don't really have to give them money anymore.
Well, it's the Kickstarter model that they think they're getting more, but eventually there's not any more you can give. You know?
No, exactly. Yeah, and you know, Kickstarter should almost. It should almost be part of sort of the form that you fill in, you know, when you start a Kickstarter. Like, if the thing goes over, what will you do with the money? You know,
I agree.
If you're successful, you're always going to go over by a little bit, right? So you sort of take that into consideration.
So even if it's just if we have too much money, we're going to give it to charity or something. As simple as that, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or invest it in our next project. If, like, let's say you're kickstarting a web series, you're like, well, if we go extra, we'll make this many more episodes, or we'll invest in our next series, you know, like just let people know what's going on.
Yeah,
and then people will know, okay, it'll go to your team and you're going to make another project while I'm still happy to give it to you.
Forget X next tomorrow, we're going to Hawaii.
That is the Adam Sandler model.
But hey, as long as you're honest about it,
I guess
it might not be an issue.
Yeah, for some reason it just halts exactly at the amount you need and nobody gives anything more.
-$1.
But I'd be so curious to see that applied to other movies, like, you know, but what happened with Highlander 2 and what was the original plot, you know, and what happened in Brazil, really? That'd be a great documentary too, you know. So we need
a natural disaster that completely messed up their production. That's how they ended up in the red so much, and that's why the insurance company took over.
I would like just to film the guys and just, why did you think aliens were a good idea? Just ask the guy from the insurance company. It's like his reaction is like, oh, aliens were selling. I don't know.
I'm sure that's what it is.
But just try to interview the guys from the insurance company that like changed the script around. Just see their reaction. It'd be great. Just for that. And other movies like that, they're like a huge mess. Like,
that's a good point. When they release like those long after the fact director's cut, they always interview in the special features and whatnot the people who had the original vision and what they really wanted.
Yeah.
I want to know why the guy changed it.
That's like, true.
That's what I want to know.
They never interview the dick producer who's like, cut this. Why?
Yeah.
Why do we cut this?
All right, let's move on to gaming news.
Very, very good. So one of the more bigger sort of recent titles that came out on PC, Diablo 3, had a short controversy. They are not backtracking. They're going ahead with more DLC.
Yeah. Well, they're coming up with a new expansion, Dawn of Souls, I think it's called. And they're not changing anything, even though they admitted they were wrong, which is hilarious. The original Diablo 3 had an online auction house where you can buy equipment for money, basically pay to win, which is what a lot of gamers hate. Mm-hmm. Some like, because, you know, they have money and they're not good. But, you know, most gamers hate. And it really altered the game because they don't want to ruin the market. So you don't find a lot of gear in the game. You find it, you have to buy it all in the auction house. And they pretty much said, yeah, this auction house was a mistake. We're stuck with it now, though, so we'll keep going.
Hey, that's how most politicians get a second term, first of all. And second, Do they mean it? Or are they just trying to appease the gamer while they're raking it in through that? But
because they are raking it in.
Yeah. They're not. No, they're really not. They have a lot of sales. The game has sold a lot based on the success of Diablo 2 mostly and based on the fact that it sold a lot. So, you know, parents that don't know say, hey, this is a popular game. I'll buy it for my kid. Mm-hmm. But nobody's playing.
Well, but what about the stores? Like, are the few people that are playing really using their integrated stores?
No, when you have the best gear, you have the best gear. And, you know, you're not going to pay that much more money just for a little upgrade at that point. You know, gamers are a little more savvy. They'll rather save their money.
So the numbers are the numbers backing up that claim?
Basically, now they're claiming they only did it to counteract websites that did that illegally for Diablo 2. They didn't want to, you know, profit on the money. It was just... No, we only did that to not have people get screwed in those third-party websites.
Oh, yeah, that's why they gave the money to charity afterwards.
Pretty much.
You know, that cut that they're getting from every single transaction.
Yeah. Totally the charity to the Blizzard, the retirement and golf fund charity.
Very nice. Does Diablo 3 still have that always-online requirement?
As well, is something that I don't understand for a single-player game. Mm-hmm. I like to own my games when I buy them. So something that's always online, when the server goes down forever, it's gone.
Yeah.
And to me, I still play, you know, my original Nintendo once in a while. Mm-hmm. And you would not tell me that Nintendo would still have like a server running Legend of Zelda just for the kicks of it, like 30 years after the fact. No, they would probably have shut that down a long time ago.
Well, actually... So we don't even have to go theoretical, because in Japan they had the satellite BS versions of Zelda and Super Mario where new stages were being broadcast by satellite every once in a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, that shut down after 5 years, you know?
Okay. So exactly. So it's very hard to know that I'm going to invest $60 in a game that I don't even own. Again, it goes back a little bit to the Xbox One and ownership. So...
Yeah.
Is very, very odd for me that they went that way.
And it's like this weird shift in the industry where they wanna shift you from buying games to be technically renting games.
Yeah.
You know, you pay $60 to sort of have a license. They're literally calling it a license to the game for X amount of time, and eventually you don't want to do this anymore.
I think it happened because of what happened with the publishing industry. Because when we did the shift to virtual books... that's what happened. When you buy a book on Amazon, virtually, you don't own the book. You own the license to the book. If Amazon decides to remove it, well, tough for you, buddy. And I think they just realized, oh my God, that's such a great source of money. And Amazon managed to get away with it. Like, the books managed to get away with it. We're going to try the same thing. You know? Yeah.
You know, and ultimately, I wouldn't necessarily mind that in games. But if your games were made and priced appropriately, you know, don't give me a full $60 box, you know, especially in this kind of, you know, unwritten contract where I'm usually used to paying $60 for a box, and usually it's mine when I bring it home, you know? If you guys want to shift this, sure, let's bring something else into the industry, but don't suddenly take, you know, something that we're used to, sort of this agreement that everybody binds into. You know, buying a game at a store seems pretty straightforward. Now all of a sudden it isn't anymore. Yeah. Definitely a dig move.
You basically have to check, am I really buying this game, or am I renting it, kind of, sort of, you know? It's very weird.
And that doesn't even, we haven't even mentioned server issues, which obviously came up, you know, when Diablo 3 first came out, buy the game, pop it in, server's down, can't play.
Yeah. That lasted like a couple of days. It wasn't as bad as SimCity,
no.
Which lasted a whole week.
It was a whole week.
That's the first week, too.
Yeah, it was, of course, it was first week. And he's like, oh, we'll have everything under control. We know what we're doing. And it's like a whole week of like server issues. And then when people logged in, they realized the game was full of bug nonetheless. So they couldn't even play it afterwards. It was like, wow. And of course, since you got the license, and it's a license, no refunds, because... You already tried the game. You paid for the license, so we're not forced to give you any refunds.
Yeah, you can't really give back a license.
Exactly.
All right. Well, looking forward to this new expansion.
Oh, totally.
Should be pretty fun with the half a dozen players who are online.
Indeed.
Very nice. So another interesting piece on the game software side. This is, again, an older one. Came about last year, I think, last summer. It's still an issue, technically, that's ongoing. Basically, what happened last year, and this is one example of something that happens regularly,
A wonderful game was banned from the App Store, Apple App Store. And Apple's reasons was that it contained objectionable material, but really when you look at it, not so much. The game is called Sweatshop. Sweatshop game, ultimately. It's an actually very smart, very well-designed, very well-made game where, you know, typical time management, you sort of have a goal, you have this little factory, you have to build, you know, items on your chain and get them out and reach your productivity goals. Of course, it's a sweatshop, so you have child employees present. It's not necessarily the safest place. You might have the occasional accident. You might need to underpay your people. You might need to not give them breaks. But hey, you have to meet your productivity goals.
Yeah.
So be it. So really, I mean, I've played the game. You can actually play it online right now. It's available as a flash game on the web at playsweatshop.com. And it's really fun. It's really smart. You actually end up playing the game and you really have to make these decisions. You're like, oh, well, I have my productivity, but I'm likely going to get this child laborer's arm sliced off. And, you know, you might think about it in a game context, whatever, but you really are sort of debating these moral choices in your mind. And it really becomes a fun, very, very interesting game experience. And, you know, ultimately exposes you to sort of the reality of sweatshops, which are a reality. Sweatshops exist.
Yeah, it really makes you think, basically.
Exactly.
And real life stuff.
Without being, you know, even too sensationalistic or violent or anything like that.
Exactly.
So, whatever reason, the statement was, the content is objectionable, pardon, for this game to be on the App Store. It was promptly removed. Now, honestly, like, I played the game, there is a little bit of blood, but I mean, there's nothing, absolutely nothing worse than you see in the majority of other games, other than the fact that it's taking place in a sweatshop.
Is the sweatshop one of those Apple factories in China?
No, actually, it's even specifically... Thankfully, you're not making iPods.
Exactly.
No, you're making shoes and clothes and stuff, okay. And you're in a nondescript Southeast Asian country. And, you know, it really is pertinent. So obviously, they banned the game. That was their justification for it. In further statements, and even in some of the agreements, the license agreements and legal text that Apple has when you're a developer, when you're submitting games, is that they do treat games differently than movies, books, and other media. They say so expressly, and essentially what they're saying is that games, it is not the place of games to deal with serious political or social or serious issues in that sense.
Yeah, see, there's three things in there that bother me.
Oh, only three?
Only three main ones. The first one is the idea that you're approved of something by exposing it. And that's a common mistake that you hear more and more in critical media being made. It's like, oh, you just you showed the protagonist shooting in school. Oh, you must be for school shootings. No, you can disapprove of what's going on. In the movie, you can disprove of what's going on in the game. And which leads directly to the second point, is like, when did irony become lost? Because irony is actually a really great way to communicate these things, because there's a layer of distance that allows you the time to think critically about what it is you're doing, what it is you're seeing.
Absolutely, absolutely. There's no better way to criticize something than through humor, you know?
Yeah,
usually. Yeah.
Or caricatures.
Exactly.
Yeah, but yeah, that seems completely lost on them.
And the third one is the statement that that you say that the developers have to deal with, which is like that games are not the place for a political comment and whatnot. And you know, Roger Ebert passed away earlier this year, and he was famous in the later years for having sparked this debate of whether video games can be art. He said no, and the entire community was like, "What are you talking about?" Yes. And everybody's fighting for video games to be recognized as art, and I think that's a good thing. But here's the thing. That's what defines art, the ability to actually comment on the world around us. Yeah. If you remove that ability from games, then yeah, no, games can't be art anymore.
No, they become just trinkets for entertainment, for sure, for sure. But ultimately, it's a medium like any other, so why not? It's interesting, because even... Roger Ebert, later, a couple of years after having made that statement that literally games are not art, did have a bit of a retraction. He was, you know, through the debates and conversations that he had with a lot of people online, essentially said games can be art. They definitely can. You know, they're sort of different from movies, different from games. It's definitely a different medium, but He's even recognized that they had that potential, even though probably most games, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know.
Not necessarily considered to be that artistic or anything like that.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that Tetris Attack is not that great.
As one random example. And you know, as personally, as someone who has an interest in making games, it was like a slap in the face. It was like, you know, I try not to be a simplistic or vulgar person or provocative, but the first words that came to mind were, fuck you, Apple. Literally, because it sort of goes against everything that even I personally want to do, you know, in terms of game. And it's such a almost like pretentious thing for them to say, you know, to sort of assume that they're in such a big position that they can almost dictate what a game is.
They are the arbiter of what's acceptable and what's not after what they're actually doing in China. It's just... it just blows my mind. I can't even get my thoughts straight on this. It's... Wow.
I mean, in fairness to that, a certain level of censorship from the Apple servers and the Apple stores is not unreasonable. For me, it's really the justification for it.
Absolutely. You know, and if ultimately the game had been designed in a way where you sort of score for hurting your employees and, you know, take glee from, you know, being abusive to your employees and stuff, you know, you could make a horrible game about Sword Shop. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But, you know, this absolutely is not the case with this. So, you know, you take two seconds to look at the game, take 2 seconds to look at Apple, you obviously make the obvious connection that this perhaps is hitting a bit close to home, and that all their justifications just do not really hold up for, I believe, most people. So that's an interesting thing. There's a couple of other games that have fallen into the same issue where they've been banned from the App Store because the topics are a little sensitive.
Is one of them about tax evasion? Because that ain't close to home for Apple too.
No, but I think you just gave me a great idea for a game.
On that note, if you have any questions, comments, please give us some feedback as to what you think of our new show. You can write us at mail@idiomatic.com or post a comment at idiomatic.com. Do you have any place where people can reach you if they want to reach you?
You can reach me at my portfolio personal website, ludophil.com. I have my email address there.
Sweet. We're also on Facebook. We're also on iTunes. We're also on Twitter. We're also on YouTube. We're everywhere.
Indeed.
Can't get rid of us.
Except one place. We're not on the Apple Store.
And now we know why.